The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Glenn Beck.
Who is running Seattle? I really want to know. Who is running Seattle? Is it a bunch of former Iron Curtain bureaucrats? Is it five-year-olds? Or is it morons? It could be a combination. I'm not sure. Last month, the genius that's running Seattle decided to tax its biggest assets, its businesses. Well, that was 4 weeks ago. Do you remember how old you were 4 weeks ago? Seattle unanimously approved the so-called head tax on big companies like Amazon and Starbucks. And this was just to, quote, solve the homeless crisis. Seattle has the third highest homeless rate in the nation. Now, that's saying something, because it's always rainy and damp and nasty outside. So you have no home and you're living in Seattle? The head tax was set to begin in January. It would have collected taxes from all of their biggest businesses. First, the city said, we're going to have a $500 tax for, you know, full-time employees. Then they walked that back to $275 for every employee. Oh, well, that's great. The city said that's going to raise about $48 million, and that's going to really go a long way to solve our homeless problem. Guarantee it wouldn't have. They already spend $78 million on homelessness every single year. I'm sorry. This year, so far, they have spent $78 million. Now, media reports are pinning the city's change of heart on the businesses going, hello. Did I mention that they've changed their mind on this? Multiple businesses, Amazon, Starbucks, have all sponsored a campaign called No Tax on Jobs to get the referendum on the ballot this November that would get rid of the tax. Well, it looks like now the referendum is not going to be necessary. The Democratic mayor said the city council heard the protests from the companies and don't want to engage in a prolonged, expensive political fight over the next 5 months that will do nothing to tackle our urgent housing and homelessness crisis. So yesterday, the Seattle City Council, they voted to go, we're not going to do that. Now, one city council member who is a socialist called the repeal of the tax a capitulation to bullying by Amazon and other big businesses. She said, it's a complete betrayal of the working class. Oh, my gosh, I want to break out in the Soviet national anthem. Actually, I hate to break this to her, but this tax was a betrayal to the working people. The showdown in Seattle is a classic case of progressive big government trying to throw money at a problem like homelessness with a strategy that actually hurts a company's ability to hire, which would cause layoffs and thus, say it with me, more homelessness. If you're spending $78 million a year on homelessness this year, it might be time to reassess your spending habits. The top three U.S. cities with the largest homeless populations, New York, Los Angeles, and Seattle. When will the voters in those cities realize that there might be a slight correlation between the progressive government and the homeless problem?
It's Wednesday, June 13th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I have a feeling it's not going to be anytime soon. So if you are living, let's say, in San Francisco, you got to love it, right? You got to love it. It is like one of the number one cities where people are screaming to get out. It's if you poll the people in all around the country, San Francisco, I think, is number one with people like, if I could move, I would move in a heartbeat. Now, that's saying something, because San Francisco, I believe, is the greatest city in all of America.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I do.
Have you just visited the one city, or?
San Francisco? Mm-hmm.
Is that the one you visited?
That's the one I've been to.
Okay,
yeah.
So yeah.
I haven't even really been to Dallas here.
No, it's a great city.
It's a great city. Yeah. It has everything. It has water. It's close to mountains. It's moderate in temperature.
It's very, to be incredibly progressive sounding, it's very walkable. It's a very walkable city.
Up.
It is, though. It's one of those you can go on vacation and you just kind of walk around and you get to stuff all over the place.
Yeah.
It's cool.
It's a great, great city. It's really a great city. They have almost completely destroyed that as a livable city because the homelessness, they're militant. And they're currently crapping all over the streets of San Francisco.
Well, you're just saying that because we were there fairly recently and there's a lot of crap in the streets. That's just why you're saying that.
Yeah, and when you say crap in the streets, we actually mean fecal matter.
Right, and not from dogs.
Human fecal matter.
Yeah. And by the way, we were there for the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So
it was cleaned up.
Yeah, Super Bowl cities tend to clean themselves up when lots of visitors come. It was still, I mean, I don't know if they made a statement. They decided to go the other way.
Right.
And add more fecal matter to the streets.
Could the average citizen just start crapping in the streets just this week? I mean, it was bizarre.
We want to prove a point to all these outsiders.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
But that's what you're missing here is, yes, they're progressive. Okay, yes. Okay, occasionally they pass some left-wing policies.
Right,
but
occasionally.
But they give choices to their constituents.
They do.
They are pro-choice.
Amen, brother. Mm-hmm. Now, listen, if you're living in San Francisco, you're dealing with a massive homeless problem. Mm-hmm. You're dealing with prices that are unheard of. It is absolutely, at the same time, it's the greatest city. It is the most unlivable city in America. It's just you cannot afford to live there.
They don't make it easy.
Well, no.
But that's why they're going to make sure, you know, they want to make it better for kids. You know, this is all about the children, as you know. These tax increases are always about the children. It's not about power. It's not about anything other than just helping young people that are young. Now, right. I did also say that they're pro-choice, so they're not that young.
No, it's kind of this sweet range.
Right. There's a nice range of a little older than, you know, the ones we're getting rid of and selling for parts, but the older ones, and we care about them because of the tax increases.
Correct.
That's how
Correct.
We show how Correct. We care.
We say, look, someday you can get a job or not. You could just crap in the streets. But if you get a job, you're going to love to pay it forward in these taxes.
Well, a lot of people will buy a presents for their spouse on an anniversary. I just raise taxes on her. It shows that I love her.
Right. Amen, brother.
Yeah, that's
Amen.
What I do. Now, San Francisco just voted, had a big vote on Proposition C and Proposition D.
Okay.
Now, Proposition D is known as the Housing for All Initiative.
The Housing for All.
Now, that is
initiative.
Something you might say, hey, are they going to do something
they
with the homeless
free,
problem?
Yeah.
It's about the children. Don't worry. Don't ask about that. Okay. Now, this would affect taxes slightly.
Okay.
There is a slight difference in taxes.
Okay, but this is going to be to help.
It's going to help children.
Housing for all.
And children.
And children. Okay.
This would boost the city's gross receipts tax on commercial rents. Now, if you don't know what a gross receipts tax is, because you have a life, it's not something that happens that often anymore. Why? Because it doesn't tax you on your profit. It taxes you on the gross receipts. So all of the money you get taxed on, whether you're making a profit or not. Even if you're losing money as a business,
no,
you still get taxed on all of that.
That is good.
That's good.
That's good.
Now, those things have pretty much gone away nationwide, but they're proposing new ones in San Francisco for the children.
Okay, for the children. Mm-hmm. So this is a tax on the rent?
Yeah, on commercial rents. Now, they already have the second highest rents in the nation behind only New York.
Yeah, well, you don't want to be number two.
You don't want to be number two. You want to raise them up. So this Proposition D would increase the taxes.
Slightly.
On gross receipts, yes. Only by 460%, though. And that is not, I wouldn't say too much.
No.
Right? For the children? Is that too much for the children?
No, it's not.
No, it's not.
You love children or you don't love children?
No.
You love children or you want to see them die. Mm-hmm. If you love children, you'll pay 400% more in tax. If you don't love children and you want them to die, whatever. whatever.
Yeah.
But God is watching you.
Right, of course.
If there was a God.
Now, this would only be a $70 million tax increase for the city's businesses, which is nothing. I mean, it's basically, you don't
even
notice
it. They're not going to notice
it. And again, is $70 million too much for kids? Do you think kids are worth, $69 million? What's your value on the lives of children other than the ones we abort?
Right.
What's your value?
Well, I mean, can I sell them?
No, we sell.
Okay. There's lots of problems to make there. The value of children.
Okay. The measure has attracted a number of prominent endorsements, mm-hmm. including San Francisco Chronicle editorial board, mayoral candidates, pro-development groups, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Pro-development groups. Mm-hmm. But Proposition D also had opponents. Over half the city's board of supervisors has come out against it, including as well as SEIU, a very powerful union, as you know. They did not want this. And you think SEIU supports every tax increase. Why wouldn't they want a 460% tax increase?
And this is where the choice comes in for California voters that I think California voters appreciate. They say, okay, well, there's, you know, we're just looking for some sensible ideas. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the progressives will step in and say, hey, a 400% tax increase. You know, we think that's sensible. And there's others that say, that's not sensible.
Right. We need common sense reforms.
I need common sense reform. Mm-hmm. So you had a choice, and the choice was?
The critics have thrown their support behind Proposition C. Proposition C would also increase the city's gross receipts tax. Now, that's, you kind of might expect that.
Yeah, you're like, okay, come on, 400% is crazy. Mm. Maybe just increase them by 100%.
Or 200%. Something sensible. Right?
Something
sensible.
That's what I was thinking.
It's in that range.
Okay.
Kind of.
All right. Does it start with a one?
It does. It starts with a one.
Okay, good. All right.
Good.
All right.
Proposition C would boost the city's gross receipts tax by 1,066%. So you could either have the 460% increase or the 1,066% increase.
Right.
Now,
which doesn't seem like I want either.
Okay, see, you don't care about kids, is what you're saying. Wow, doesn't care about children. He
no,
does not care about children.
I'm just thinking, if I'm doing business there, and this is on my gross receipts,
mm-hmm. yep. Like, let's say it per unit that you rent, it costs you $1,000 to run this building,
mm-hmm.
And you charge $1,200 in rent, so you have a $200 profit. They're not taxing the $200 profit. They're taxing $1,200, all of it. So you're going to now go from profitable to not profitable because of the tax.
Yeah, but that will help take the money and the You know what?
What?
It will take the evil industrialist, mm-hmm. the evil capitalist, the evil business owner.
Yes.
And get rid of them. So then the land can go back to the people.
Right. Or something like that.
Right.
Because certainly it's not going to raise rents to yet another ridiculous level. So no one can find.
No, that won't happen.
No. Okay, good.
No, that won't happen.
Now, this
one, it does, they should pass rent control.
Right. Yes, and that would fix it. Proposition D would raise $70 million in taxes. Proposition C, $146 million in
taxes.
Well,
that's probably not accurate. You know, as we have seen, no matter how high you raise the income tax, it generally receipts remain around 18%.
Yeah, right.
So it doesn't matter because, you know, you're going to put people out of business. People are going to find a way around it. So I'm not sure that it will raise the entire 150,000.
Never seems
million.
To. Does
yeah,
it?
Doesn't.
It never seems
no.
to. Now, if you're like, I don't know, I'm not sure which way to go, you should probably know how the San Francisco chapter of the Democratic Socialists are ruling on this. They have thrown their support shockingly behind the 1,066% tax increase, calling the 460% tax increase a crass attempt to break working class solidarity. So, how did this turn out? You're going to be stunned. You're going to be stunned by this
one. No, it's San Francisco. I think they probably voted for the... Is everybody crazy in San Francisco? Let me debate this here for a second. Voters, it's an off year, so you're getting those who are passionate. I think... there was enough to go for the 400% increase and not go for the 1,000, although I think I'm out on a limb.
It does
because
seem
San Francisco is totally nuts.
Yes, and you also seem to believe San Francisco doesn't care about children, which is strange, other than the ones that they abort. The ones that actually make it past the abortion process, they don't care about those babies or something. Measure D, this is the one that raised taxes 460% on commercial landlords, failed 55.2% to 44.8%. Okay, so that one did not even come close, really. However, Measure C, the 1,066% tax increase, is currently leading 50.7 to 49.3 in a race that has not officially been called yet. It's too close to call as they finalize the voting. It does look like it's going to pass, though. So it looks like they will increase the rent tax by 1,066% in San Francisco.
Well, the good news is, let's say you have a restaurant in one of the, you know, just on the streets of San Francisco. By the way, write that down. We should start a TV show and call it that.
That's a good idea.
You know, let's just say this, you know, you've got a restaurant out there. The good news is you are now paying more in taxes, so your customers can come in still, pay higher, you know, rates for your food, and still, as they come in, no matter what, how bad your food is, they'll be like, oh, thank God it doesn't smell like human fecal matter in here. And I think that's one of the advantages of having a business in San Francisco. You don't have to be good. You know, if you're in the restaurant business, you just have to make sure your food doesn't smell like fecal matter on the outside of your business. And you're going to be a massive success. And the good thing is, the more successful you are, the more taxes you will pay. Therefore, the more you care about children.
Yay!
It's great. Keep pooping on the street, San Francisco.
By the way, we should also point out they also passed another tax that would give legal help to tenants facing eviction. So now that they've raised taxes on the rents, they also are raising taxes to give money to people who are being evicted. And because they raised taxes for schools.
Oh my gosh, what is wrong with Californians?
And they also got clean energy bonds passed. I don't know if you know clean.
Can I tell you something? I would invest in San Francisco.
Oh, my gosh.
If I was somebody
in Seattle. San Francisco and Seattle.
If you got a bond, I'm like, I'm going to buy that because they're going to be able to pay that back. Mm. No, it's fantastic. Anyway, owning a home has never been easier, and it continues to be an incredible investment. Whether you're buying your first home or your next home or even an investment home, you know, maybe you're thinking about selling your home in California and moving to someplace sane. Well, then what you need is a great loan company, somebody that, you know, going to get, you know, that approval really, really quickly so you can get a new house. American Financing. American Financing employs salary-based mortgage consultants, which means they do not work on commission. So they're not trying to jam you into something that somebody, you know, some financial instrument that the banks are pushing. They work for you, and they have an A-plus rating for the Better Business Bureau and over 1,800 Google reviews. They offer convenience of e-sign so you complete your documents from the comfort of your own home and on your schedule, and there's no upfront fees. They utilize every loan in the industry. They'll customize a loan program to fit your specific needs. They're licensed in all 50 states, so call them now. American Financing. If you need a mortgage, call 800-906-2440. That's 800-906-2440 or online at AmericanFinancing.net.
American Financing Corporation, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Glenn Beck.
Yeah. Stu has immediately jumped. I told him there's another item on the ballot in California this November, and he immediately jumps to, you know, it's going to be bad, isn't it? And I'm like, no, it's going to help the children. Of course it's not bad. Wait until you hear, and this one affects you. Wait until you hear what California is just put on their ballot.
It's that time of year. It's warming up, and it's the time of year where people go and they look for homes. People are out in the market, and the market's heating up, and you need somebody on your side if you're buying or selling a home. Go to realestateagentsitrust.com to find that person. Look, you're going to need a real estate agent anyway. Why would you just pick some random person you kind of know, or some person who was recommended to you by that, you know, person you don't really want to hang out with on the weekends? Why not go to a place that's actually screened through the real estate agents and found the people who have the best results, who have the best advertising practices, who have the best reputations? You can find those people at realestateagentsitrust.com. If you need to sell a house fast and for the most money, or if you're looking to buy, go to realestateagentsitrust.com and you'll be introduced to the best agent in your town. We're talking 1,200 agents on this network. Let these agents earn your business. Get moving with realestateagentsitrust.com. It's realestateagentsitrust.com.
This getting into work today was a little difficult. The traffic in the main atrium of our building was a little high today. Everybody has been working really literally around the clock to get our museum together. We had to up the insurance yesterday to $30 million of artifacts that are going to be in the building. And it's going to be pretty remarkable. And we'd love for you to attend. This is the first time we've ever opened the entire studio. Back of house and everything. We've opened up the property cages and everything else because we have so much stuff to show you. And we're really excited to show it to you.
$30 million?
$30 million.
Wow, it's a lot.
You're thinking about...
I have a key.
I don't think that's something building. That you announce to the.
No, I just staff. Think if there's an enterprising
Can
young
I tell you something?
Person out there that's interested in history, maybe they could contact me.
Right. There is. It's weird because this is the first time that we've always hired police and we have security here all the time, and whenever we do these museums, we have extra security. This time. We have been required to have there's some special group of people that this is all they do is protect artifacts. And they're like, I don't know, some like, I don't know, Mossad badass museum people. it should be proved to be interesting, just kind of behind the scenes. But we would love for you to attend. Tickets are still on sale this weekend. The Rights and Responsibilities exhibit. Some is already sold out. Some good portions of the day are already sold out. We would love for you to attend. We'll be here all weekend long. And learn about history and show it to your kids. There's some remarkable stuff.
And it's important to remember, of course, no matter how much security you have, I mean, you can never guarantee, you know.
Especially if you have somebody on the inside?
Well, I mean, there's a current documentary out in theaters called right. Ocean's 8.
And, yeah, right.
They show...
Not a documentary.
They show a pretty detailed plan right. on how someone could...
Right.
Potentially,
but you would really need inside information on the layout
yeah,
of everything.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times that's part of it. Like where there's someone right. inside who knows the layout, who right. maybe has access to.
Do you know anybody that would be that bad that would do something like that?
That what?
Huh? Anyway,
enterprise.
You could find. Hey, you believe in the free market? I believe in the free market. Mm-hmm. What's this really worth? Mercury1.org/museum2018. All right. I've got some good news for you, Stu, because there is another ballot measure in California.
Oh, wow.
And this one is coming this November. Now, the last ballot measure we just talked about increased the taxes on rental property by 1,000%.
A little over that.
Well, you know, mm-hmm. why be picky? Mm-hmm. I mean, let's... California... has now on their ballot, they're going to be asking voters if they agree or disagree to break up into three separate states. They are voting in November, and if the majority of voters cast the ballot to break it up into Northern California, Southern California, and yes, California. California has the majority of the beach, by the way. Southern California, though, has, you know, San Diego and all of that. California, it would be the smallest. It is all the beach line in Los Angeles and Hollywood, all the way up to Monterey. Then Northern California is right up by San Francisco, all the way up to the border of Oregon. Southern California cuts out, you know, past the valley and then goes down into San Diego. So they're breaking it up into three. They want to break it up into three states.
What's their reasoning?
What do you mean? What's their reason?
Why are they?
Do you need reasons in California?
Absolutely not.
Okay, so this is the first time that this will have been done or voted on since 1863, when Virginia split into Virginia and West Virginia. So here's what they're wanting to do. Los Angeles County is the one that would retain the name California. What they're hoping will happen is economic stability. They say that the rural regions would suffer from extraordinary rates of poverty as individual states, while the coastal communities would flourish in the new smaller states where the lion's share of California's tax revenue is generated. What they're trying to do is they're trying to make the areas smaller so it will be more responsive to that area. Because right now, just the big cities are sucking up all of the resources, as this guy says, well, it's going to be poverty because, you know, it's most of the money is there. Yeah, but most of the spending is there, too. And so they're trying to break it up and give people a chance to, you know, vote for what's good for their region.
Can California, though, dictate to the United States that it now has 52 states? Is that something that can happen? I mean, maybe it is. I don't.
It actually is. I thought it was wrong, but it is in the Constitution. It's really hard to do.
California can do it without any federal approval. Like, there's no role of the United States. Again, like, you know, I'm a big federalism guy, there's a reason for this. But, you know, there was a big deal when we added, you know, state 49 and 50. Usually there's a big deal that goes on with that. If we're just, I mean, I guess because it's the same territory.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to find it where it is in this article. But there is a section, here it is. Article 4, Section 3 of the U.S. Constitution, provision guiding how an existing state can be divided into new states. I thought you couldn't divide an existing state into two.
I could see it that you could do it, but it has to go through a process that would involve the federal government, apparently not.
They say that it is rather lengthy and complicated to get through. But I think this is good. If they've divided it to where the farmers have to answer to the farmers, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, right. Like, again, yes, exactly. Like that, you could see there being... just like you don't want everything run by the federal government, you want it run at the smallest level possible. Having a gigantic state that's not necessarily responsive to all the areas is a problem. But in theory, this would give them four new senators, would it not? If they have two new states, they got four new senators.
Oh, shut up.
So now we have 104 senators?
No.
There's got to be some role.
Senators, yeah. No, it would be senators.
There's got to be some role for the federal government. You can't just have an unlimited amount of senators from one state if they just keep dividing it into little pieces.
Well, wait a minute. If you can.
Texas is now 600 states.
Good Texas.
Wow.
I mean, look at that. They can't control California. They can't serve the people in California. Texas, look how large Texas is. We seem to get it done here.
Yeah.
And you know how? Our state house only meets every other year. We don't pass a lot of state laws. The state doesn't interfere. The local governments take care of things.
I saw one of the biggest problems that has developed and is on both sides is it's become common. The common complaint about the government is that, you know, they don't do anything. That, you know, these people, they don't get anything done. They shouldn't be getting a lot of things done. Other than reversing the crap they've already tried to do, they should be pretty much sitting back. I don't care if they never show up to Washington, D.C. If all they can repeal all stuff online, and that's pretty much all we need them to do. There's plenty of laws. There's plenty of laws.
I mean, look at their solutions in California. Look at the solutions they come up with in California. Has life in California become better? Has it become easier? Has it caused jobs to grow? Hey, let me ask Hollywood. Have all of your unions and all of your rules, has that helped? You were Hollywood, USA. It was the greatest place. If you were going to make a movie, that's where you made a movie. Shockingly, that's now what, Vancouver? People will make it anywhere but Hollywood. Have all of your rules, your regulations, your labor unions, all of your taxes, has it helped you? The answer is no. What is it going to take for Californians to learn that? All right, I want to talk to you a little bit about buying and selling Bitcoin. Buying Bitcoin is difficult unless you're buying, you know, one of the three or four big ones. If you're going to invest in a smaller Bitcoin, I don't even know how to buy some of these things. How do you sell them? There is a lot to learn when it comes to cryptocurrency. And cryptocurrency is the future. We are going to a cashless society. So what is blockchain? Blockchain is going to be, I think, the way we communicate with each other at some point, because it's basically encrypted and there's no way that you can open it up. You want privacy, you need blockchain. So all of these things are happening, and they're all happening so fast. We needed an expert to be able to teach it to us. And while we're being taught, we said, hey, Tika, would you be willing to put together a course on this for the listener and the viewer? Absolutely. So they have. It's a crypto course, and it is going on now, and we're getting rave reviews on it. People who are using this, even people who thought they knew a lot about cryptocurrency, are like, I learned all kinds of new stuff. SmartCryptoCourse.com. Go there now. SmartCryptoCourse.com. Or you can call 877-PBL-BECK, 877-PBL-BECK, and get more information. But it's SmartCryptoCourse.com. It's a little remarkable. Mark Sanford lost last night in his primary. He has been... I think he has a remarkable story. I mean, he went from a guy who was really, really great to a guy who made a huge personal failing to coming back and just knocking it out of the park. He was a congressman who was standing for the conservative principles, and I don't know what he did other than not vote in lockstep every time with Donald Trump. I mean, it was 90%, wasn't he?
I think it was 80. As I believe I heard on CNN, one of the supporters who was wanting Sanford to lose phrase it, he was the fourth most disloyal congressman, which I guess...
Could you say that again, please?
I would like to, yeah. He was the fourth most disloyal Republican congressman. Which, again, I don't know. I think their loyalty... What's their loyalty to, again?
They have an oath to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States.
So how would they rate the fourth most disloyal to the Constitution exactly? I don't think there's a rating necessarily for that. I know if you go by the Liberty... Like, the Liberty, the Conservative Review, and other ratings agencies that care about the Constitution, Sanford does incredibly well. But he was the fourth most disloyal in this particular analysis, which, again, you know, look, I a lot of people made the case to us, you know, and we're not huge. We're not big Trump fans in the primary, as many people would recall. However, the case after the primary was it's Trump or Hillary, which is a very understandable case that we talked about many times. Hillary would have been much, much worse than Donald Trump has been on policy through this administration. There's no question about it. They're light years apart, further apart than I would have believed. However, this is not Trump versus Hillary. This is Trump. This is loyalty to a president versus Mark Sanford, who's been unquestionably great on conservative policies. It's an interesting place that we're in because, you know,
I don't like loyalty oaths.
You know, can you imagine? I mean, this, take this at any other point in history. Think of what you would have said about a liberal who changed their vote because the president told them to. I could never, I would not live my life for a second in a place where I felt because the president tweeted to vote a certain way, I would listen. It would make me less likely. You know, endorsements, we've always joked about them. Who cares what the endorsements are? Who listens to endorsements? You make up your own mind. Well, I don't know. At least according to Donald Trump's analysis of this situation, he's the one that changed it. And it's hard to disagree with him. It may not have been the tweet, but Sanford's opponent was running on, I'm more Trump than Mark Sanford is. And she was right. She is. You know, she pointed out that this is Donald Trump's party, and it is, and clearly, right? I don't think there's no opposition, is there?
It is going to end like the Democratic Party, because the Democratic Party became Obama's party, and you don't do that. You don't build a party around a person.
It doesn't work out well. I mean, look at what with Obama. Yes, he won election twice, but look at how he hollowed out the entire Democratic Party.
Remember
the talking point? They lost 1,000 seats in state senates and governors and congressmen. Remember that talking point?
Yeah.
I mean, that was what happened when they associated themselves to one man.
Yeah, but I think
man.
They're going to come roaring back now because they have Alec Baldwin considering to run for president against Donald Trump. So, you know, it's going to be quite a comeback. They have a deep, deep bench of Alec Baldwin and Bernie Sanders.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
It was Tuesday night in May. Susanna Maria Feldman. She went out with her friends. They were a little bit rowdy, but generally a good group of kids. But Susanna didn't come home that night because she had been raped, strangled, and buried in the dead of night. Her body was dumped into a ditch leading to a railroad track near the refugee camp in her hometown of Wiesbaden. That's in Germany. Susanna adored her 5-year-old sister, cherished her family. She was 14. They found her body 2 weeks later. By then, Ali Bashar, the 20-year-old man who had raped and strangled Susanna, fled Germany, along with his parents and 5 siblings, all using fake names. They went back to their home in Iraq. Ali Bashar had previously been accused of robbery, assault on a female police officer. He had also been suspected in the rape of an 11-year-old girl who lived in the same refugee station as he did. He was a refugee, yes, did I point that out? He arrived in the country October 2015 as part of the wave of puppy-eyed refugees that flooded Europe, who many European countries so proudly gave in and gave shelter to refugees. Susanna was of Jewish-German heritage. The Central Council of Jews in Germany said in a statement, "A young life has been put in a cruel way. Our deep compassion applies to the relatives and the friends. Susanna was a member of the Jewish community. At present, much of the background is still unclear. We expect the law enforcement authorities to provide rapid and comprehensive information, as well as tough consequences for the perpetrators." I tell you this story today because it's not just about Susanna. She's not alone, not by far. She is just one of a growing number of young women and young girls who are being sexually violated, abused, and in imaginable nightmares, murdered. Then they're tossed into a ditch, left in trash bins. There is no respect for life. Europe, this is what so many people were afraid of. This is what the so-called naysayers were afraid of. The governments are still not responding. The world, generally speaking, is not racist. There are racists. There are racist policies. But generally speaking, I think, at least in America, we are not racist. We are observant. Multiculturalism is the problem. If you come to our country, come to our country knowing what we offer and what we do. If you want to bring your country, your traditions, and they involve killing people, raping people, seeing others as insects, infidels, vermin, whatever it is, you're not welcome here. And it's about time our government, all around the world, starts to recognize that there is a problem. And the good people that really are refugees are going to suffer the consequences because of their inability and unwillingness to act. Because the worst part of this story is, this is just the beginning.
It's Wednesday, June 13th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
There is an unbelievable story that just does not make any sense to me at all, other than this is what happens when a government just starts passing laws and is not using their brain at all. What is the point of prison? The point of the prison is to punish people for their crimes, but rehabilitate them so when they come out of prison, they are good citizens. Right? Isn't that the point? There is a case now of Matthew Charles. It is absolutely unbelievable. In the 90s, he was nabbed for selling crack. He spent 21 years in prison. He got out of prison on parole. He has completely changed his life. His community loves him. He goes to church all the time. He's got a job. He volunteers in I think, soup kitchens. This guy is a model citizen. Well, the state decided they made a mistake because you've got to serve until 2027. It's on the books here. You got to serve it till 2027. So they took a guy who had been out on parole for how many years, Stu? Two, three? I don't even know. I think 2 years, and is a model citizen. He's going back to prison until 2027. This has got to stop. This is wrong, and there's something we can do about it. Now, he has an attorney, and Charles' attorney is on with us now, Sean Hopwood. Hello, Sean. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, Glenn.
Sure. So, tell me what we don't know about Matthew.
Well, I think one of the unusual things about Matthew's case is that, one, he got an extremely long sentence for a drug crime, 35 years, which in the federal system, you have to serve 85% of that. So best case scenario, he's got to do 30, 31 years. And I think what's remarkable about his case is he's done 21 years in the Federal Bureau of Prisons. Not only did there's no indication he had any acts of violence or committed any other crime in prison, he didn't get a single minor disciplinary report. And
how rare is that, Matthew?
I have never seen it. And to put it in context, I don't know if your listeners know my story, but I served 11 years in federal prison myself, and I'm often held up as the model of rehabilitation. And I got two incident reports in 11 years, half of what Matthew served.
Wow.
So Matthew is quite the amazing man. And then he gets out and just makes a community and with his church in Nashville and volunteers. You know, the first 2 years out of prison after serving a long sentence is very precarious for people. They're trying to get some stability and get their life back on track. And Matthew, despite all of that, went and served at a soup kitchen every Saturday for the homeless. And what's interesting is the Department of Justice had a chance. The judge asked them, will you dismiss a charge and let this man go free rather than re-locking him up for 10 more years? And the Department of Justice said no.
Why?
Well, what they would say is they're just following the rule of law. But that doesn't make any sense because federal prosecutors decide what to charge and what not to charge every day in federal court across the country. There are many times people break federal law and prosecutors never charge it.
A lot.
Well, the U.S. Congress does not value your liberty or anyone else in this country because what most Americans don't know is that the Congress has found that there are 5,000 federal criminal laws, 5,000 things that are so serious that the Congress thinks that you could potentially go to jail or prison for.
So, first of all, is Matthew, is he back in prison yet?
He is in county jail in Kentucky awaiting transfer to another prison. But we are hopeful that the president, President Trump, will grant him clemency and return him back home to the community that desperately wants him back.
I read an article about his going away party, and he was so gracious. And I mean, I wouldn't be. What was his attitude as he went on?
You know, if it was me, I would be very bitter and angry. But that's not Matthew's character. Matthew kind of left the bitter, angry guy behind in prison many, many years ago. He has been, you know, he's sad and devastated because he finally got his life back on track only to have it all ripped away from him. But I tell you, he is also a very humble man, and he has been just overwhelmed with the number of people who, you know, his change.org petition is close to 100,000 signatures. We did a lot of interviews last week, including NBC Nightly News, and he's just been overwhelmed at the number of people from all political stripes who are supporting him and his quest for clemency.
By the way, that petition is posted at glenbeck.com if you want to go sign it. What's the goal for this, Sean?
Well, the goal is to just get enough public support that the president decides this is worth doing, and the White House is aware of Matthew's case. I have yet to run into anyone who thinks that it was a smart or wise idea to send him back to prison for 10 years. So I'm hopeful that something will happen and that the president, much like he did last week with Alice Johnson, will sign a clemency petition and Matthew can go back home to his girlfriend and his church community.
It's like in a theoretical world, right? If we had an Elysium or the Matrix where we could test these things, and you had criminals who had, you know, did bad things, and you could somehow test the fact that maybe they could return and you could prove it, you could release people all the time. The issue is, of course, that would be incredibly risky to release them into the actual population if you weren't sure. Here's a case in which we essentially got the opportunity to test. We were able to release this guy to see if he could blend into community, to see if his life had been turned around. It's a success story. It was proven that he could. And yet, on what seems to be a ridiculous technicality, they're throwing him back into prison. I mean, it's unthinkable.
There are thousands of Matthew Charleses in federal prison that just haven't had the opportunity he has to get out. The great irony about the American criminal justice system is, one, we think that we are the land of the free, but on the other hand, America incarcerates its citizens at a greater rate than almost any other country on the planet. And two, the great irony of it is, the longer someone spends in corrections, the less likely they generally are to come out and live law-abiding, successful lives. Prison doesn't make people better.
Right, and you don't... I can't imagine going to prison for 20 years, 21 years here, and being able to even function on the outside. It was a different world that he lived in the 1990s. Completely different.
Yeah. When I was released in 2008, I had never been on the internet, never seen an iPad, an iPhone, or an iPod. One of the things I quickly realized when I went to pick up the paper and look at the classified ad section for jobs was no one advertises jobs in the classified section. And Matthew had to overcome all those hurdles too. Just the stress of so much change when you've been incarcerated that long. And yet he was able to overcome all of that and show that he's a changed person, which just, you know, in a perfect world, the Department of Justice would have recognized his rehabilitation and just cut him loose.
Sean, do you have time to stay with us for a little bit longer?
I do.
Okay. If you stay on with us, because I've got a few... This is a fascinating story and should be more than fascinating to people. We need to take action on this. You can go to glennbeck.com and sign the petition and get the president's attention. And we've got to correct this. There's something good happening in America right now, and that is we're starting to come together on one thing, and that is prison reform. It doesn't work. Let's talk about prison reform. How do we do this? And how do we get the people out of prison that shouldn't be there anymore? Sean Hopwood, he is the attorney for Matthew Charles. He's also an associate professor of Georgetown Law. We can continue our conversation here in just a second. Let me tell you about Goldline. The central bank is coming out. Is it today? Is today the day or is it tomorrow that they're announcing the increase? There's yet another increase coming from the Fed. Things are not looking rosy the way we all feel. There are real signs of real trouble. Inflation is going up. In fact, the Fed will probably announce tomorrow that any of the tax cuts now have been erased because of inflation, not just the inflation that is happening because there's too much money out there, but also because of the tariffs. The tariffs are, you're paying more for almost everything now. And that's because of these tariffs. So they're going to raise the interest rates to try to get inflation under control. I don't know how they're going to do it, but, you know, they're the experts. May I suggest that you can seriously consider gold or silver, because the one hedge against inflation, This is when it really performs, is when inflation starts to go up. People put money into gold because that retains its value. That just keeps going up as your dollar, the value of your dollar or your stock or whatever, goes down. So call them now at 866-GOLDLINE, 1-866-GOLDLINE, or goldline.com. There are restrictions on products pledged as collateral may apply. Read their important risk information, but call now, 866-GOLDLINE, 1-866-GOLDLINE, or goldline.com.
Looking for a great Father's Day present? Then bring the whole family to the Rights and Responsibilities exhibition presented by the Mercury Museum. Take a glimpse of what the world was like before men had rights and tyrants ruled. Join us Father's Day weekend, June 15th through the 17th, here at Mercury Studios in Dallas. Get your tickets at mercuryone.org/museum2018.
Sean Hopwood, he is the lawyer representing Matthew Charles, an incredible story. He's an associate professor of Georgetown Law. Sean, we have about 3.5 minutes. Can you tell me your story a little bit?
Yeah, so my story kind of is not too dissimilar from Matthew Charles. In 1997 and 1998, as a 21, 22-year-old, I robbed 5 banks and was sentenced to 12 years and 3 months in federal prison, and got to prison and learned the law and had 2 briefs that I prepared for other guys and friends of mine in prison that were granted by the United States Supreme Court. And then I started winning cases in federal court all over, even though I had never been to law school and hadn't even taken freshman English and then didn't have an undergraduate degree either.
That is unbelievable.
This is just like Suits. It's my favorite show. This is exactly what happened in Suits. Oh my gosh, I can't believe that's happening.
So you get a Gates Foundation scholarship when you leave and you go to the University of Washington, and now you're a professor at George Washington Law?
I got out in 2009. I finished my bachelor's degree. I went to the University of Washington up in Seattle School of Law. My first job out of law school was clerking for Judge Janice Rogers Brown, a very conservative judge on the Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit. And then I came to Georgetown as a teaching fellow for 2 years, and I went on the market to be a law professor, and Georgetown kept me.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
I have just the most amazing job where I get to help people every day.
So, Sean, the odds that if the president doesn't act, that Matthew's going to get out of prison?
Well, he'll get out, but he'll have to do 9 or 10 years. But I'm trying not to think about that, because I really think the president who, you know, I was in the White House about a month ago when the president talked about the need to reform our prisons, and that it doesn't serve anyone well for people to go to prison and come out worse off.
Correct.
Rather than better.
Correct.
And he talked about the need for America to be the land of second chances and even third chances. And, you know, knowing he said that and believes that, and knowing that the White House is also working on a prison reform bill, I've been working with them for months on that, I think there's a good likelihood that the president will see the injustice for Matthew
Sean,
Trump, him lose.
That is fantastic news. We will continue to follow this case. Thank you so much for the work that you're doing. Tell Matthew to keep his chin up. There are people from all walks of life that are behind him. We urge you to go to glennbeck.com. It's posted right there on the front page where you can go. You'll click. It'll take you right to the petition. You can sign the petition there and help Matthew Charles. Let's right this wrong.
Seemingly, there's been
a
support.
And thanks for talking about Matthew's case, and I'm just hopeful that he's going to get to go home.
Me
thank,
too.
Thanks, Sean.
Thanks, Sean. Appreciate it. God bless.
Glennbeck.com is where you can find the petition. There's really been support across the aisle. Both sides agree that this is a miscarriage of justice.
This is something we can unite on.
And I think Trump will do this eventually.
I do, too.
We just need to get it in front of him.
Yes. So please, go sign the petition. It's that White House petition. You can do it now at glennbeck.com. Tell a friend. So, President Trump has deemed the meeting with Kim Jong-un a wild success and said that we don't have to worry. He's no longer going to be a threat to the world on nukes. It might be a little early to claim victory.
We did sign a piece of paper, which is great.
Well,
now, again, this piece of paper is actually less restrictive on North Korea than previous pieces of paper that have been signed. Though, again, this is very consistent with the way Trump deals with these things. I think he, you know, when you're doing something with him, he praises you, and if praises you effusively. And he goes the other way when you're doing something he doesn't like, which is why he sounds so much more negative about Canada and the media than he does a guy who's got a bunch of concentration camps and murdering his own people. He like right now he's going, he believes he's going the right way with Kim Jong-un. So he's praising. And if Kim Jong-un screws this up, changes, decides to not denuclearize, he will change and start killing him again in mm-hmm. the media. And I mean, that's just the way he does it. It's not the style that I enjoy. But again, I don't know if anyone's noticed, no one elected me. They elected him.
Yeah.
And this is his style. And
we should be rooting for the best.
Absolutely. And I think part of this too is he does this a lot in negotiations in which he tries to lock you into your position. So he goes out there and he praises something he didn't really do, right? Like they're saying, well, we'll denuclearize the peninsula. It's based on tons of other conditions, right? Like it's not like, oh, everything's going to be gone tomorrow. But he goes out publicly and says, wow, everything's going to be gone tomorrow. Or actually, in this case, he said, everything's already gone, right? He's trying to lock him publicly into this position. So when Kim Jong-un comes back and says, well, yeah, I'm not doing half of the things you said I was doing. Trump can go, wait a minute, I stuck my neck out for you. I was out there saying that you were a good guy. I was out there saying that you were funny and loved your people, and now you're doing this to me?
Yeah, it could be.
You know, I think there's a bit of that that he does, and he's done that forever, right? He's always tried to lock people into those positions publicly, and then he acts as if you've reversed it on him when people try to enforce the original agreement. Well, look, I mean, it's worked for him in the past.
And yeah.
Maybe, I don't know if Kim Jong-un feels those same media pressures considering his situation, but maybe he does. Again, he's a very bizarre character, Un. And if you, well, Kim. And if you go through Kim Jong-un and you're saying, all right, well, you know, maybe we try some unconventional stuff and maybe it moves it. You know, I mean, it's again, I think everyone, whether you like Trump or not, is saying it's worth a shot, right? Why not give it a shot? We just got to make sure that we don't fold and give him everything just so we can say we have a win. I think that's what everyone's concerned about. But
I just think we should
give it a shot.
Well, let's wait for this to play out before you trash it or not. It's in play. Let it play out.
You pointed this out last night on the television show, and you went through step by step how Reagan worked on the Gorbachev thing and with Iceland, and several of the steps you noted were wait.
Yes.
Let them simmer in it. Let them sit there and think about it a little bit.
I mean, the way Reagan did it is similar. First, you start out with the, you know, evil empire speech. You start out saying they're really bad and we got to do something about it. And you do it in such a way that everybody in the world says, you can't say that about them. That's going to only make things worse. Mm-hmm. Evil empire speech, Rocket Man. You know, hey, go ahead. We'll vaporize you. I mean, think of all the things that Donald Trump said with North Korea. Then, after you say that, you set up a coalition and you penalize them. You try to choke off their money, which we have done. But what Reagan did is he went to the Pope and he went to Margaret Thatcher. Margaret Thatcher was putting external pressure on, but the Pope was putting internal pressure on. He had connections inside. What did Donald Trump do? Donald Trump went to China. China has called him in because China is the pressure on the inside. Now, we don't know how much pressure. We don't know what's going on. But China played a big role in this. Remember, they called him out. He doesn't leave the country. They called him out and said, you have to come meet with us in China. So he took his cute little train in his toilet and he went to China for a meeting. What happened there, I don't know. But I would imagine it was pressure. So he's got the pressure from the outside and pressure from the inside, exactly the way Gorbachev did. Then you wait for a meeting. But you put something on the table in that meeting that you're refusing to walk away from, something that is really, really tempting. So Gorbachev, what was put on the table, Gorbachev wanted to put on the table was Star Wars. Well, Star Wars was a lie. We didn't have Star Wars. So what was it that we put on the table with Kim Jong-un? I'm convinced it's that film. I'm convinced that he went to Little Rocket Man and said, look, you love the Western culture. Why are you avoiding this? You be our friends. Look, you're going to have a great life. You're going to hang out with the movie stars. That's why he made that thing feel like a movie. You're going to hang out with movie stars and basketball players. You're going to be part of the global community. You're going to be part of the West. That's what Kim Jong-un wants, is that. So Donald Trump put that on the table. Now, to me, it's a lie because there's no way he's going to be able to stop. Once that country begins to collapse, they're not going to stop it. And who's going to prop him up? Nobody. Nobody's going to prop him up. So the minute he takes that bait and goes into perestroika or glasnost, which was the opening of the Iron Curtain. Then it's too late. So Donald Trump has just offered him the world of, literally the world. You're going to be a superstar. You're going to be remembered as one of the greatest leaders of all time. You're going to open up and you're going to, let's put some hotels on your beaches. It's going to be great. He does that. I think the little man wants it. Now you wait. If you start to see that Kim Jong-un starts to kill people around him, high-level hardliners, you're going to know that it's working. Because the next thing that happens is the hardliners are going to say to him, you can't do this. What are you, crazy? You can't do this. And Kim Jong-un wants it. He wants it badly. He believes Trump can do it. So, we wait, and we see if he starts to make a move towards more openness, if the hardliners start to be killed off, then there will be another meeting. And that's when Donald Trump can close the noose, just like Ronald Reagan did with Gorbachev. Now, this is my optimistic hope, but remember, that took 8 years to pull off. We're day two. Wait. Wait. Play the game and then wait. Well, it's that time of year when you were inside because it is hot as blazes of hell. No, I mean, it's just like standing under a blowtorch. It's no big deal. Anyway, it's hot, it's getting worse, and you have to be inside, and your air conditioning is just pulling overtime now. The AC unit here at the studio is working overtime, the AC unit at my house, everybody's house. And replacing that is not cheap. So what do? You have to have a fresh set of filters in your system from FilterBuy. Otherwise, it's going to have a hard time sucking in new air to cool. And it, as it sucks in the new air, it's filtering all of the toxins, all of the allergy, you know, crap that's in the air. And it's going to filter it all out. As that starts to get clogged, then your air conditioner has to work harder and harder and harder. Now, FilterBuy has, you know, auto delivery, so you don't have to think about it. And you're going to need to change your filter probably twice now and at the end of the summer. Because you're going to be using it all the time. If you're anything like we are, you're going to be using it all the time. They're going to knock 5% off your order just for making your life easier and setting up regular delivery. You can save time, save money, breathe better, and don't have to think about it anymore. Save on wear and tear and save on allergies. It's FilterBuy. FilterBuy.com. FilterBuy.com.
Glenn Beck.
All right. There's a couple of things that you need to know. First, there is an update that is not going to go over well in the White House today on Michael Cohen. Stu.
Yeah. Well, it's
this is just breaking, so we're just reading up on it now.
It's an odd story. So Cohen is dealing with 3.7 million documents that were seized, and they're going through the process now of trying to figure out exactly what's going on with them, which ones are privileged and which ones aren't. So far, only a few have been privileged. 162 out of 300,000 of the first batch. So 162, not 162,000 of 300,000, but 162 of 300,000 documents have been privileged and will not be introduced. So, but again, a lot of that's probably also nonsense. Mm-hmm. You know? Anyway, the big development that's apparently happening, according to ABC News, that Cohen's lawyers are leaving.
Do we have any idea why?
There doesn't seem to be an indication in this particular story about that. You know, speculation about that he's now, what they're saying is they believe this means he's cooperating with the New York
attorney
general and or district attorney. So the development, this is how it reads in the ABC report. No replacing counsel has been identified as of this time. Cohen, now with no legal representation, is likely to cooperate with federal prosecutors in New York, sources said. This development, which is believed to be imminent, will likely hit the White House, family members and staffers and counsels hard. And they believe as this is going through, I mean, you know, who knows if it doesn't, this does not mean that Trump did anything wrong by any means. It could very well mean that he has documents on Manafort and who else has already been indicted. And we don't know what the deal is, but him cooperating is certainly not something that the White House will be excited about hearing.
Depending on what he has. I mean, if they already are throwing, you know, Manafort to the wolves, and rightly so, in my opinion, what difference does it make if he, you know, turns evidence on Manafort, as long as it doesn't implicate the president or anybody else new?
Right. Of course, though, I mean, it's just going to be so difficult, even if it's not criminally damaging. You know, these documents being out there are, God only knows what Michael Cohen was doing. I mean, Cohen, as you know, is...
he's a movie style bad guy attorney.
Yeah. We never even played the audio of him, did we?
No.
When he was calling up and yelling at the reporter.
No, we didn't.
A couple of weeks ago. You know, he's just, you know, he's not a good guy. And look, Trump knows how rough and tumble he is. And because of that, never brought him into the White House. Cohen was never in the White House. So that's. He was able to bring in people who, like Bannon, who were loudmouths, and, you know, other people who, like, you know, Flynn, who had his issues, although doesn't seem to, you know, to be nearly the bad guy that Michael Cohen is. I mean, Cohen has had all sorts of problems for a long, long time. And, you know, his job, which was valuable at times in the real estate business, is not something you want anywhere near the White House. And Trump knew that from day one. But what this guy actually has in his archives, what he's done, I mean, you know, what he's done on behalf of the president, whether the president knew about it or not, could be an issue. I mean, you know, Trump has said 100 times he had no business in Russia and all of that. At that time, we now, at least has been reported widely, that Cohen was on his own trying to get Trump Tower Moscow built. Separately from Trump, no one has said that Trump told him to do this, but he had some freedom to go out there and try to create deals and was dealing with some very odd sources in Russia about trying to get in 2016 during the campaign to try to get Trump Tower Moscow built.
And here is the kind of guy he is. Here's Michael Cohen talking to a reporter saying, back off.
I will make sure that you and I meet one day while we're in the courthouse, and I will take you for every penny you still don't have, and I will come after you, Daily Beast, and everybody else that you possibly know. Do not even think about going to where I know you're planning on going. And that's my warning for today. So I'm warning you, tread very lightly, because what I'm going to do to you is going to be disgusting. Do you understand me? Don't think you're going to hide behind your pen, because it's not going to happen. I'm more than happy to discuss it with your attorney and with your legal counsel, because mother, you're going to need it.
So,
it's a kind of a... If you are in the situation where you are dealing with the press and the press is as unfair as they are to, Donald Trump or many people... There'd be a good portion of you that want that guy on your side,
sure,
to do that kind of thing. I don't appreciate it or like it, but that's the kind of thing that has come out, you know, before. And that's not the kind of thing that the FBI is looking at. But you can see he plays real hardball. So what has he done? If anything, we'll follow this and bring you up to speed as more comes along.
Glenn Beck.
All right. One more reason we actually might be stuck in, you know, some virtual reality version of Alice in Wonderland where everything is upside down. I'm not sure. Spanish tennis player Rafael Nadal gave what is seemingly a more rational explanation of the supposed gender wage gap than any of the feminist or Marxist or tenured gender studies you know, those who are the professors now of gender studies that have, you know, rallied around these crazy explanations for decades now. Rafael Nadal, currently ranked number one in men's singles tennis by the Association of Tennis Professionals, with a, you know, a buttload of career titles. He apparently is, I don't know, the professional tennis embodiment of Jordan Peterson now. I'm not really sure. He was in an interview and he was asked, in tennis, should women earn as much as men? Okay. How are you going to answer that? How is the average person who just wants to stay out of the spotlight?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's just, wow, of course they should. You know, they're equal in every way, and we should all support women and their fight for equality.
So here's what he said. It isn't a comparison that we should even make. Female models earn more than male models, and nobody says anything.
I love this.
Why? Because they have a larger following. In tennis, too, who gathers a larger audience earns more. Wait a minute. Is he saying that, A, the wage gap actually affects women and men, but just in different ways? And two, any disparity can't be conveniently attributed to systematic misogyny? That's crazy talk. The wage gap might be a fiction of the fourth wave critical theory based feminism. Shut up. Did he issue a trigger warning? Oh, my gosh. Did I? Let's go back in time. This next story, I just want to warn you. There may be a trigger. Trying to ask people to be personally responsible for their wages and understand each and every business and how business is different. Is he seriously saying that equality of outcome is bad in today's world? That's great. That's too much common sense there.
He's a bad person.
He's a Nazi. Mm-hmm. Don't say he's a bad person. He's a Nazi. You know, everybody, quick, get outraged. Take to Twitter right now. We have got to expose this evil, disgusting, incredibly logical Nazi.
It's Wednesday, June 13th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
You know, the one thing that I've learned in putting this museum together, which is opening this weekend, it only runs Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I think tomorrow night we're having a big dinner. Friday night, you can come and have a dinner. It's a fundraiser for Operation Underground Railroad and the Nazarene Fund. Tickets are, you know, a bit pricey. It's going to be a small gathering, and we would love for you to attend. I've got a few surprises for the people who attend. But then the, you know, general admission tickets for the museum are happening all weekend long. I'm going to be here all weekend. Everybody on the shows are going to be here all weekend long. And we would love to see you and meet you. And thank you for listening to us and watching us and supporting us. The Rights and Responsibilities exhibit is all about correcting history. What is it? What is it about? What is it about? You know, the academia that makes it so easy for them to change history. Well, what makes it really easy? Us. Our ignorance of history. We have some documents and some items that are on display this weekend that will really, truly blow your mind. This one, I just can't believe, every time I open this up, I just can't believe I'm holding it in my hand. This is a document from Thomas Paine. Now, most people don't know Thomas Paine. And if you know Thomas Paine and say, oh, he was a great patriot, you then don't know the other half of his life. if you look at him and say, oh, yeah, he's the founder who's the atheist, you don't know him at all. And this document proves it. It's a letter between him and Benjamin Franklin and I think John Adams. And he's responding to them. And I'll get to it in a second. If you don't know who Thomas Paine is, he is the guy. He was born in England and his dad was a Quaker who made rope for ships. And once he was old enough, he took up his father's his trade. And then he worked as a tax collector. Well, he wasn't good at, you know, being a tax collector or making ropes. His wife and his baby in 1760 died during childbirth. And so he just had this, I mean, he just really had a rough upbringing and early life. He remarried, then he got divorced, and he was at a low point when he met Benjamin Franklin in London, who said, you need to make a new life for yourself in America. In America, just leave this crap behind. So he's 37 years old. It's 1774. And he comes to work for Benjamin Franklin as an editor at his Pennsylvania Gazette magazine. So he's starting to write as he comes over and he starts learning about America. And he writes, African slavery in America. And it was a total takedown of slavery. He gets swept up in the revolutionary spirit. And when the war breaks out, he writes a couple of things. First, he's the guy who wrote Common Sense, which galvanized the nation and really got everybody to say, Congress, we want to break away. We want to break away. It was Thomas Paine and Common Sense that gave birth to the Declaration of Independence. Then, about a year later, it's around Christmas time, 1776, George Washington is losing horribly. We haven't won a single battle. Everybody's starting to say the revolution is over. He is losing guys left and right. They don't have faith in him. And they're headed down south. They're headed past Philadelphia because Philadelphia, all of the members of Congress have already fled because the British are coming. And they're just going to kill all of the revolutionaries. George Washington knows he has got to turn this around. And so he is camped on the southern side of the Delaware, and he is praying, what am I going to do? How do I rally people around? At that time, somewhere else is Thomas Paine, and he's marching with troops. He doesn't know where Washington is, but he starts to think as he's marching, you know, these are the times that try men's souls. Well, that is the beginning of the American crisis. He asked for the head of a drum, the guy who was marching next, because he didn't have any paper, and he writes the American crisis down. And he said, I want you to first get this to George Washington, then get it to a printer. George Washington does not know what to say to his troops until the head of the drum arrives. He gathers everyone and says, I just want you to listen to these words. These are the times that try men's souls. It's the winter soldier, not the summer patriot. You are winter soldiers, and I need you to get into boats, and I need you to go back the other direction. We're going to take on the Hessians. These are the Navy SEALs of our day. It's because of Thomas Paine. War ends. By the way, Thomas Paine hasn't made any money because he's taken all of the profits and he's given all of the profits to the war effort. So this guy's a massive hero. The French Revolution breaks out. He believes that the French Revolution is the American Revolution. George Washington and everybody else except for Thomas Paine and Thomas Jefferson understand, no, this is not life, liberty, and property. This is liberty, equality, and fraternity. And that's different. They don't have God. Thomas Paine gets really, really angry. He leaves. He calls George Washington all kinds of names. Washington says, I'm not going to bail you out if you get in trouble over there. He goes over. He writes The Rights of Man, which is defending the French Revolution. It's a big success. And then the next one he writes, and that's The Age of Reason. This is the one that had Teddy Roosevelt say, oh, Thomas Paine, oh, he's that filthy little atheist. Well, he's not a filthy little atheist. But history records him as a filthy little atheist. Because of what he wrote, when he came back to America after the French Revolution, everybody abandoned him and hated him. Within 10 years, he died broke and alone. There were only 6 people that attended his funeral. 6. What did he say that was so bad? And what was his defense? You will be taught that he is an atheist. In my hand right now are the pages written explaining exactly what he meant and why he wrote it, which completely changes history. I'll tell you about it coming up next. Don't forget, you can see this document, read it yourself, along with the first draft of the Declaration of Independence, which is mind-blowing, and the original handwritten Gettysburg Address from Abraham Lincoln. Over $30 million worth of artifacts just this weekend only here at our Mercury Studios. Join us June 15th through the 17th. Tickets are still available at mercuryone.org/museum2018. In 2017, the Better Business Bureau heard more than 5,000 complaints on alarm companies, which puts them into the top 10 most complain about industries. Home security systems. Are you kidding me, right? Now, who's going to fix that and revolutionize it? Well, you can go the old way, which is, again, top 10 most complained about because they have hidden fees and contracts, and it's just a hassle. Or you can try something new, the new way to protect yourself and your family, your home, or your business. It's Simply Safe. They rely on good service, a good product to earn your business. Now, they don't have a contract, so you're never locked into anything. You're absolutely in control. There's no wiring of this system. You own the system. It's really, really simple. It's why they have an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau for 10 years running. Over 40,000 five-star reviews online. Simply Safe, the way security should be. Learn more about it at simplysafebeck.com. Simplysafebeck.com.
Glenn Beck.
Just reading these documents, they're phenomenal. They're truly phenomenal. And change history. Change your understanding of it. If you learned that Thomas Paine was an atheist, you will see in his letter from, I thought it was John Adams, but it's to Samuel Adams, dated 1803. Paine is responding to Benjamin Franklin and Adams' criticism of the Age of Reason. And they say, why would you even write this? Why would you even write it? And he says, now remember, he is in France during the Revolution with the guillotines. The people of France were running headlong into atheism. I had the work Age of Reason translated into French to stop them in that career. Wait, what? Why would an atheist write something, have it translated into French to stop them from becoming atheists? He said they needed to fix themselves to the first article, which he talks about earlier. The first thing before of every man's creed, and that is, I believe in God. Why, my dear friend, is my religion exactly, and this whole of it, a question? It makes me believe that you have no idea of what I wrote in The Age of Reason. Most people haven't read it. I extol a reverential love for the deity. Let me give you a paragraph from it, he says. Do you want to contemplate his power? We see it in the immensity of creation. Do we want to contemplate his wisdom? We see it in the unchangeable order. Do we want to see the abundance of which he fills the earth? We want to contemplate his mercy. We see it in his not withholding the abundance from everything, even from the unthankful. So he goes on to talk about that he has a problem with religion, and that's what the people of France were going through. Problem with religion and priests. And he even says, you know, how these priests will stand up for the shedding of blood, and they get involved in things that they shouldn't get involved in. And all of the war and the whoop from the pulpit has concealed the object. Religion is not the cause, but it is the stalking horse that put it forward to conceal themselves. So in other words, there's a lot of these people who are total frauds, and they're using religion to manipulate, to become rich or to become powerful or whatever it is. So he is anti-religion, not anti-God. He is also, he's not a Christian, but he knows the parameters of God. And if you read this letter, he clearly believes in God. It's truly a remarkable letter that you'll be able to read. It's going to be all out page by page. You'll be able to read. You'll be able to read it yourself. It's really incredible. And at the end,
the end is the most amazing part to me, because sure, we've been told one thing about history and it's completely wrong. I mean, and yes, he had a lot of these feelings, but I mean, this proves really, you know, that he did believe in higher authority. When he's saying, how do we contemplate his brilliance? Who's he? Right? Like, he's talking about somebody there.
Oh, he goes on to talk about, yeah, specifically about God.
Right. I mean, and it's so that's proved in this letter.
Yes.
However, it ends with him, and pardon my French, if I may, in this particular case, he ends it with an ass joke.
Well, I mean, that's not French.
Well, he was talking about the French Revolution when he, yeah, was discussing it. That's why I said, pardon my French.
Right. And it's not even a good joke, but it might have been, you know.
Oh, but he legit, in giant block letters that you can see, just makes a joke.
Yeah. So he does this whole thing, and it's very, very serious. And then on the last page, he writes, what word is it that all men loves? And by taking away the first letter, most men love. And by taking away the first two letters, it shows the character of the man that loves neither. Okay. So what is that word?
What?
It's glass.
Uh-huh.
All men apparently love glass. This must have been because the windows were just coming in or something. I don't know why, but
we're all big glass guys. We're all huge glass guys.
Right. Then you take away the first letter, and most men love lass. And then you take away.
I don't know what he means by that.
Women, mm-hmm, but I mean, he's saying most men love.
Right. So he's
he is an
inclusive
advocate for, mm-hmm, same sex marriage. And then you take away the first two, and it shows the character of those who love neither women or glass for some reason.
it's a terrible joke.
So may have been really funny back then, I don't know, but it's not real funny now. And but it's crazy, he's writing this to Samuel Adams. Is he's like the Billy Graham of the era.
Yeah, yeah.
He is the big preacher in Congress, and you know, part of the founding troop.
Now known as the beer guy, but not necessarily
then.
At the time.
No. Maybe that's what he was saying, a glass of ale.
Ah!
Glass of some of your beer there, Sam.
Maybe.
So, let me give you a fact that I want you to really remember and spread this far and wide. New figures have come out. You know, we are the worst as a nation. We're horrible at everything, right? Well, according to the Giving USA Foundation's annual report on philanthropy.
I love this story.
We have just set a record high for charitable giving in the last 12 months.
Yeah, what do we give, like $40? Stingy bastards we have in this country.
$30.
By the way, this does not include any government giving at all.
May I?
Not just trying to help. I'm a helper.
Well, you're not really helping.
I'm a helper.
You're not helping. So here's
what I do. I help.
So America gave $410 billion last year. $410 billion. It has never been that high. In fact, we eclipse the world in total dollars given from our own wallet. And the vast majority, $287 billion, was given by people and not corporations or foundations, but by average people.
Now, vast majority.
If you happen to be traveling internationally and someone says, well, you know, your country stinks on ice, you'd say, well, you know, without the ice, you stink. But that's a different story. How much money do you, France, give as a country? Because we're not just charitable in the U.S. We also provide the most foreign aid by far, and no one comes close to us. So the United States Department requested $51 billion last year to give to foreign aid. Now, Americans gave over $400 billion. But the government took money from us and gave an additional $51 billion. Just for some perspective, that's $30 billion more than Germany. That is $30 million more than the UK, $40 billion more than France, and $45 billion more than Canada. No country in the history of the world has ever been this charitable. Wow. That is truly American exceptionalism. And that comes from our Judeo-Christian upbringing. I gotta say it. Oh, I'm gonna say it.
How dare you?
I'm gonna say it.
Don't.
You're a bad person.
Don't. Not only that, but the private giving, as a percentage of GDP, because everybody else will say, well, you got 300 million people. Of course, you gave more. As a percentage of GDP, we gave double the second place country.
Wow.
Doubled the second place country. And, I mean, it's triple or quadruple places like Germany and, you know, crappy France. Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Is that the new name?
Yeah, it's called crappy France.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
They officially, because they thought, well, yeah, I mean, it's. Why deny reality?
My country's crappy France. It works. Mm-hmm. It works. Okay, mm-hmm. That's good.
That is amazing. And that's a cultural thing, right? It's because of
our upbringing of a couple of things. Mm-hmm. One, Benjamin Franklin. What is the American religion? It's not Catholic, Protestant, or anything else. The American religion is there is a God. We should serve him. And the best way to serve him is to serve our fellow man. That's the stock of this nation. So we've always done that. Plus, we have always looked to ourselves to fix problems. We don't stand around like everybody else does. Why doesn't the country do anything about that? We do it. We do it. And the bigger our government becomes, the more socialized our government becomes, the less we will do for ourselves. That's what's happening. And the world will weep when the lights go out on America. They will weep. They will have no idea the good that we have done.
There's so many new developments as well that are really positive here in the United States. I think we're going in the right direction.
Thank you for pointing that out, Stu, because the University of California at Santa Barbara, UCSB, hosts a website that's controlled by the sociology department. It encourages parents, finally, somebody's saying.
Finally.
It encourages parents to allow their young children to participate in sexual play.
What Wait, you
perfectly healthy.
Hold it. You mean your college students?
No, no, no. This is, they actually say that sexual play is most common between the ages of 4 and 7. And it's, quote, completely normal, generally harmless, and encourages, they're encouraging parents to allow these behaviors. So try to be positive when you see this happen.
If your 7-year-old is playing with a 4-year-old, is that, I mean, that's
perfectly normal.
What do they mean
generally harmless?
What do they mean generally harmless? Yeah, you know what? They don't accept that with guns, do they?
No, they do not.
Over 300 million guns. How many are used in crime? What? They are generally harmless.
There's a section on the website that reads, children might display affection to their friends by hugging and kissing or touching each other's genitals, which is perfectly normal. Parents should not react in a negative way because children are just exploring. So you should encourage this kind of behavior. If the child is performing these activities excessively in public, why, you might sit them down, have a talk with them about how this should be done in private.
So if it's happening like at a Taco Bell booth, you want to maybe put a stop to it.
Yes. Don't try to thwart the activity, of course, altogether. You don't want that.
Wait, just tell
them to do it behind closed doors.
Weren't these the same people that were telling us that we had to tell our kids which parts of their body was private? Yeah. And which part was a no?
So that nobody will touch?
No touch zones?
Yeah. When was it when we started predicting that they would have to make this? They would have to normalize things like pedophilia. And for the last several years, we've seen this. Now, they're talking about sex among kids themselves, like a 4- and 7-year-old inappropriately touching is perfectly normal and generally harmless. But how far away are we from telling us all that it's fine if adults engage in this activity?
You have to. If you're being consistent, you have to.
There's absolutely nothing anymore, really, that's verboten. There's nothing that you should say to your kids.
I think that word is.
Hey, don't do that.
That word makes me think of the white Germans.
Did I make you uncomfortable?
Looking for the master race. Were you uncomfortable there?
Absolutely,
that was a trigger word for me.
It was somewhat Third Reich-ish.
Although trigger word is also a trigger word because it has the word trigger in it.
Oh my gosh, now
and that
you
makes me
have made me uncomfortable.
I'm sorry.
I wish you wouldn't have brought up that image in my head.
I'm sorry.
Wow, you, Stu? Are you uncomfortable as well?
I'm hoping for a soundproof glass case that I could get into. I can just stay in all the time.
You know, the University of Utah has a cry closet. We should install one of those here.
I'm sorry, what?
It's a cry closet where you go and cry and get all emotional about your finals exams. They've set them up all over campus.
It has pillows. It has pillows.
It does. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean,
a cry closet.
Uh-huh.
Well, if you're going to, I mean, and that's, by the way, we want to make sure that people understand it's okay to cry at school about a test.
Yeah.
But we just want a safe place for you to
And you might be crying because your parents told you not to touch other kids' genitals when you were a child. Right. And you're still harmed by that.
Because they may have reacted negatively.
They may have, and they shouldn't have.
They should not have done that.
They have a cry closet?
Yeah, they do.
Is there any chance that anybody's ever going to grow up anymore? Is there any chance? Can you imagine a cry closet?
I know.
We used to look up, when I was a kid, we would look up to college students as like they were grown-ups. They were the cool grown-ups.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine.
They're pansies now.
Yeah, you're like, somebody used some trigger language and I had to go into the cry closet and cry all day. You'd be like,
what?
You're 8. Okay. I don't want you touching me anymore. You are weird.
Isn't it, though, because I used to have this view that, you know, we would talk about this before, like, oh, well, it's great. You know, you can have your participation trophies in your cry closets, and my kids will be the ones you're serving at your job where you can't do anything because you're completely unprepared for the world.
Yes. Yeah.
And I've converted this belief because I now believe that these people who are building the cry closets and crying inside the cry closets
it will become so universal that cry closets will just be the thing. That was what society will be. It's like we've talked about, like, with, you know, global warming before. You can come out and you can say, well, global, you know, forget that global warming is real or not. Talk about the idea that, you know, they're encouraging you to do things that absolutely, with all certainty, even if you believe every piece of nonsense that Al Gore has ever said, will not solve the problem. You know, doing things like,
well, you know, you need to unplug your appliances and when you need to,
you know, all these little steps that will make a quote unquote difference, when they know, you know, it's just about selling the idea, right? Mm-hmm. It's not about actually making a difference. You can't scientifically make a difference with any of those, you know, causes. So I used to think, well, eventually, like, people will realize that.
This
sure, we want to be clean, but, you know, this is stupid. And the reality of the situation, the reality of fossil fuels being incredibly useful to build, I don't know, a civilization on. At some point, people just get older and realize this. They're sold on it when they're dopey kids, and they eventually realize it later on in life. I no longer believe that's accurate at all. I now believe that those nonsensical ideas that are fed to teenagers just become the truth later on. Not that they're actually true, but that just, it's so widely believed and never challenged that they just adopt that as the entire civilization's policy.
So
we're screwed, is what I was saying.
You are right. Because I've always felt.
No pulling back from this?
No. What he's saying about how that just becomes the norm. I've always believed in self-evident truth. I don't believe that anymore. I don't believe there is.
Things aren't self-evident.
They are not self-evident to people. Mm-hmm. Your freedom is not self-evident. That is something that had to be carefully taught and studied and reasoned.
Yeah.
And then when that society had enough reason in it, it started going, wait a minute, I shouldn't have somebody else telling me what to do.
Yeah.
That's when it becomes self-evident. So it is quickly becoming self-evident that the dinosaurs that believe in cry rooms being funny or cry rooms being tragically sad because it makes you into a four-year-old that will never be prepared for life, that is going to be self-evident that we are wrong and the cry room is right.
Yeah. I mean, the first step was to kill common sense and reason. And they've successfully done that.
Are we not seeing this exact process happen with gender right now?
Yes.
Right? Like, gender, yes. Like, again, like, there was an idea. It's never been about hating someone or anything like that. It's just like, it's always been, there's been two genders, and that's the way it was.
Well, X and Y.
And there was a, right, chromosomes, right? Like, and you'd think that eventually the chromosome thing works, it plays out, and people understand that that's what it is, despite the crazy things that people would say. And what happens now is it just keeps moving down that road. And for a while, I mean, if you go back 20 years, you'll see comedians like crazy making fun of concepts like this. They would mock them, the idea that there were 100 genders.
You don't know.
Now it's only crazy conservatives who say 95 genders is not correct. And in 10
right,
years...
because I believe there are... Hear me carefully. I think there are 250 genders. I'm not part of these guys. They're haters.
And in 10 years, people will be like, do you know at one point they believe there were only 250 genders?
Yeah. It's true.
That's what will happen.
It's true.
It's amazing.
Can you believe they actually believed in genders at one point?
Yeah.
You see the fashion show that happened in London or Paris this weekend?
I did not.
With the guys who were wearing prosthetic bellies, because we live in a world now where men can have children.
Thank you, finally.
And I mean,
I've appeared pregnant for years, and I believe in that completely.
I don't have to wear prosthetics. Yeah. I just cannot seem to give birth to this thing. Anyway, imagine taking a test on a 100-day or a car on a 100-day test drive, getting a pair of new shoes, walking around 100 days. My wife wouldn't make it for 100 minutes in the shoes she buys. And then she buys these shoes and she's like, I have got to get back to my closet. You're in the kitchen. I've got to take these shoes off. I've been wearing them since the closet to the kitchen. Oh my gosh, stop wearing them. They're uncomfortable. Anyway, Casper is giving you 100 nights to test the Casper mattress in your own home with their 100-night sleep challenge. 100 nights. I've done it. I love mine. It took me about a week. I didn't like it at first, kept sleeping on it. This is the problem that you have when you're in a store. You find the one that you're comfortable in, But that's not what you're comfortable in night after night after night after night, because, you know, all of a sudden you're like, this is way too soft. My back is killing me, or whatever it is. That's why Casper has a better idea. Try it in your home for 100 nights. If you don't love it, they will ship it back for free. They'll pick it up. It's not a problem. No questions asked. The choice is, are you going to get a good night's sleep or not? Try it for 100 nights, risk-free at Casper.com. Use the promo code Beck. You're going to save $50 on the select mattress. That's promo code Beck at Casper.com. Terms and conditions do apply. It's Casper.com. Promo code Beck. The California, six Californias, or three-state solution for California, breaking it up into three states, actually got onto the ballots yesterday, and it should prove interesting to see exactly what happens. Also, some news from Venezuela. They are talking now about dollarizing and getting rid of their currency.
Well, that's the opposition plan. The Maduro plan is just taking three zeros off the end of the money. So 250,000 would just be 250.
Oh, well, that sounds a lot easier. And zeros aren't worth anything.
I mean, they're nothing. They're zeros. So
that's a better plan.
It's much easier. Just move a decimal point even over a few slots.
Right.
That's all.
You make it 25 cents, then everybody's rich.
Glenn Beck. Mercury.